Yesterday, we spoke at length about the progressive system of sacrifices that are recommended in the Vedas, which basically describes the essence of the Vedic culture. The Vedic culture is set up for the purpose, for vanashrama purposes, to organize society so that people can live in a peaceful way and yet make spiritual advancement. So the essence of the Vedic culture, the vanashrama society, is spiritual advancement. So when one takes to the Vedic culture, he performs activities, although that he may be materially entangled in the world and materially attached, still the activities that he performs will gradually elevate him in consciousness. And elevation in consciousness means elevation from ignorance or passion to goodness. And as one becomes elevated to the mode of goodness, what happens is that his desires change. The symptom of the mode of passion is that it gives birth to unlimited desires and longings. And the symptom of the mode of goodness is that happiness and knowledge develop. Hugo, could you close that door, please? So what results from the mode of passion is one gets filled with so many desires and longings. And the nature of material desires is that they burn like fire. We have a tendency to think that if we attempt to satisfy our material desires, then we will become satisfied. But the example is given in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, I believe, that it is simply like fire and putting fuel on the fire. So if you think that the fire needs something to burn, and therefore I'll give it some wood and thereby satisfy it, no, the fire only grows more and more hungry. So similarly, when we try to satisfy our material desires, our desires simply grow and grow and grow. That is the mode of passion, and therefore the result of the mode of passion is distress. Because how frustrated we are when we have unlimited desires. The more we have desires, it is not that we become more and more happy, but every desire that we fulfill gives birth to so many more desires. So the more desires we have and the more we attempt to fulfill them, the more frustrated we become. So material desires and the mode of passion lead to distress in that way. So therefore we never cultivate the mode of passion unless we're in the mode of ignorance. Then the mode of passion is a step upward. So, when we take to the Vedic system, what happens is that though we are entangled in our material desires, by taking to the Vedic system, at least we're surrendering to that authority, that we're accepting the fact that we cannot be happy and get our desires satisfied independently. We have to depend on another. So this is a very big step for a materially conditioned soul, because we're in the material world because we want to be independent and we're envious of Krishna. And when we're envious of Krishna, we're envious of anyone better than us. So just to surrender to someone that, yes, for my happiness I have to please this demigod or that demigod, is a big step in the right direction. And I have to not only please the demigod, but I have to please him according to the way that's prescribed in the Vedas. So therefore, in that way, there is a great surrender due to the acceptance of authority. Then, and when that is transposed to contemporary civilization, we can understand that that means that the mode of ignorance should not be cultivated. Rather, one should cultivate the mode of passion. It is better than the mode of ignorance. That means one should work. And this is one of the prime themes of the Bhagavad Gita, that we should work We should work. We should work very hard. Because in that work, there is a chance at least to offer some of the fruit of the work to Krishna. But if we're just lazy and don't do anything, there is no chance of any good coming to us. So this is the basic principle, that work is better than not working. Even if that work is fruitive or born of material desires, it's still better to work than not work. So this will come up in the section that we're going to read today in the third chapter. So one should work, and then one should gradually accept that there is a purpose to life. And how does that come, that acceptance? That comes by association, and it comes by knowledge. It comes by hearing, shastra. And that is born out of piety, goodness of the heart, and previous purva sanskaras, previous impressions of the heart of spiritual life. Born of that will be some piety and a tendency to surrender to God. And you see that among so many people, whether their tendency is ignorance or passion or goodness, there are so many people that have a tendency towards love of God. And you see this when you're distributing books. I don't know if you've had this experience. Who's distributed books here? Raise your hand if you've done a lot of book distribution. That's a lot. It's nice. So sometimes someone very, very well-dressed and sophisticated, very intelligent, walks by and you hand them a book and he snarls and teeth almost seem to grow. And then some low-looking person walks by and as soon as you show him a book, he's so attracted. Now why is that? It doesn't have anything to do with the modes of material nature. It has to do with something special. Spiritual credits that these different people have built up or not built up in their hearts. But generally the principle is that one tries to become elevated in the modes of material nature. So when one works, even if it is passionate, selfish work with no spiritual end, that is better than someone who does not work at all. And someone who works, once he understands through knowledge and spiritual experience that there is a supreme and he is tiny and insignificant, then his work can become yoga. And so much of the preaching that we do in different parts of the world, in India, in the United States, in England, with congregational members, is like this. We preach to people and we tell them, you're working so hard and life is temporary and you cannot take it with you. You should give something to Krishna. You should renounce some of the fruit of your work to Krishna. So gradually by doing that, because that's based on knowledge and it's based on a little detachment, gradually what happens over some time and chanting Hare Krishna and association and purification is one becomes elevated in consciousness and no longer is one attached to his work, the fruit of his work. He's no longer attached to making material advancement. And that is called nishkam karma, and it is a situation that is very much in the mode of goodness. That one is working, but he doesn't desire to get the fruit of one's work. In other words, he's not working to get anything. He's attached to his work, his duty, but he's not interested in getting the fruit from his duty. Now this consciousness is what's going to be described in the second part, that was a continuation from yesterday. We sort of gave a summary of what we learned yesterday, plus a little more. And now we're going to hear about someone in the situation that's different from the person who's working to get some fruit, to make money, to enjoy his life. And it's different from the person who's interested in attached to those things, but yet he wants to make advancement in spiritual life. This person has no material attachment, which naturally comes by the process of hearing and chanting and doing service and giving up the fruits of one's work, gradually, gradually, one becomes detached, especially by association and experiencing the higher taste of Krishna consciousness and engaging in the spiritual purificatory process. Are there any questions so far? Because that was just the summary. Yeah.
Now we've seen the wisdom civilization, they are very passionate, working very hard, but this is so they also destroy everything. Is that ignorance, or would it be better to them to be more in ignorance? So they wouldn't destroy so much.
No, how is it if they're more in ignorance, how will they destroy less? Destruction is in the mode of ignorance.
That's ignorance.
Destruction. That is ignorance. Passion is creation. Ignorance is destruction.
So when you create an atom bomb.
Yeah, good point. That's creation for the purpose of ignorance or destruction, which naturally happens. Because passion, this will be described in the third chapter, that passion leads to ignorance. This will be specifically described. To protect your material creations, you want to kill everyone else, which is anger, the mode of ignorance.
You just said that in Nishkam Karma Yoga, the person is attached, he's detached from
the fruit of his work, but attached to the work.
Because in your notes at the back of this book on Nishkam Karma Yoga and the Yoga Lady, you said that he's detached from the work as well.
That's higher. That's higher.
So.
That's higher. That will come higher. That will be explained.
Would his only attachment be to that book, to setting an example?
No. It's attached. That, born of the mode of goodness, Nishkam Karma Yoga means a tendency towards attachment to the work.
Are you saying that he's attached to the type of work he's doing?
Yeah, and his duty. He's attached to his own duty.
So if he's a cobbler, then he's attached to making shoes, but he's not attached to how many shoes he makes?
He's not attached to getting anything from it, but it's a dutiful consciousness. Duty, that's the key word in understanding. Nishkam karma and work in the mode of goodness. And from that comes knowledge. From working in the mode of goodness that's going to be described comes knowledge. And what is knowledge? That you're not your body.
Sometimes we heard of transcendental passion. Does that exist? Or do we automatically to pass to goodness to become transcendental?
Yes, we have to be in goodness to become
transcendental. Passion?
It means it's a polite way of saying we're using our passion in Krishna's service. It is transcendental in the sense that it's better than using our passion in other ways, and it's transcendental in the sense that it brings transcendental results. But it's not really devotional. Devotion is born. Goodness is the jumping off point from devotion, but you can't tell people that because then they get discouraged. So I didn't tell you that. Oh, what else? You know, when someone, I want to work, I have so many things to do. Yes, you should work for Krishna. Yes, it is transcendental, it is wonderful. You know, and they see so many people in their way, and, I'm working for Krishna, I don't care. I'm working for Krishna. And that's what we experience in our temples most of the time, you know, the younger devotees have a passion to serve Krishna, which is good, because they're serving Krishna. Gradually they become purified.
You made the point
about
the Western world, but the whole world now is in the world of fashion and ignorance. If you look at the example of America, where they are spending about $800 million on the healthcare cost, you know. And they are spending about federal government spend $40 million on the physical justice department.
And they won't even give you a few million to serve in Krishna.
That's just the federal criminal justice department. And where every state, county, and the city, and the state government level.
Are you a doctor?
No.
No wonder you're complaining. Okay, let's move on. Now Krishna in text 17, chapter 3, text 17. But for one, now here's, there's a difference. Whenever, usually when there's a two in the verse, yas two, atmaratireva-syad, that means there's a change of subject. But when there is, when someone is atmarati, or takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. So the question is, if someone doesn't, it's clear why, if someone has so many material desires, it's clear why he's working to satisfy his desires. But should a person who has no material desires, should he work? That is the question that's going to be raised. He's not interested in gaining anything, so should he work? He has no duty to perform because he doesn't have anything that he's trying to get. Should he work? So that's going to be described. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties. He has no reason to perform his duties because he's not trying to get anything. Nor has he any reason not to perform such work. Nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. Why? Because he's not trying to get anything. He doesn't need anything. He's atmarati, satisfied in the self. So does he work or not? So this is going to be explained in the next few verses. Now a principle is going to be stated. Krishna is going to explain a principle. And this is actually the level that he's requesting us to work on at this point. And it can become even more fully transcendental when we add a few things to it. But this is the basic level that one should work on. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of one's work, of one's activities, one should act as a matter of duty. For by working without attachment, one attains the Supreme. So this is the basic level of nishkam karma, of working without attachment, but doing one's duty properly with great attention. Not that we put too much salt in the dal every day and say, well, I'm not attached. Of course, you eat in the restaurant, so of course you're not attached, but everyone else is disturbed. No, we do our duty very, very carefully, dutifully, but without attachment to the result. Now, next, in text 20, we're getting an example of that principle of someone who works. He's not attached to the fruit of his work, so he works, he gives up attachment to the fruit, but he doesn't give up work. And the example is King Janaka, who was a sadhu. Kings such as Janaka attained perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Because if one works without detachment, so that takes the mode of good, without attachment, that's the mode of goodness. And then what is the result of that? One attains the Supreme. That's in text 19. Because if one works in the mode of goodness, one starts understanding clearly that he's not his body. This is the transcendental process. So it goes from ignorance to passion when one's attached to the fruit of one's work, and then one gets a transcendental objective, although he's attached to the fruit of his work, and he starts renouncing the work, the fruit in Krishna's service. And then gradually by doing that, he becomes detached from the fruit of his work. And then by working in a completely detached way, especially for Krishna, then for Krishna's pleasure, not only detached but attached to Krishna, then one actually will make great, great advancement. And this is the process. These are the steps in the process. And that's why sometimes the devotees, they'll go out on Sankirtan. And what is the mood in which we should go out on Sankirtan? We should go out in a very surrendered way, distributing books like that, and just giving the books and taking donations. But when people take the donations and keep some of the money also, then they're not acting on this platform. And it's very bad, especially if they're asking for donations for Krishna. And then they keep some of the money for themselves. This is very bad. Very, very bad. There is so much sinful reaction attached to that.
What if it's a situation where Grihastha community, they wouldn't go out at all, and yet they have expenses, so a managerial adjustment is made.
That's okay.
Because the books otherwise wouldn't come out.
Then it's looked at, you're taking a percentage, you have to keep some to maintain yourself, to maintain your body. So when someone is just doing that, like a householder, to maintain his body in an authorized way, that's authorized by Prabhupada, it's on the same level, basically, if one's detached. But if one, basically, I'm describing someone who's stealing. And Krishna said, the thief gets punished. Yeah.
Why in 3.18 does Krishna say that he doesn't have any reason not to perform his work?
Because he doesn't have any reason to act, and one of the alternatives in action is not acting. He's not motivated by either acting or not acting. So he has no material motivation at all. So you say if you have a job and you don't feel like work, you don't got to feel like going to work today. So you have a motivation not to do your work. And you're going to get your pay anyway or something like that, or you don't care. But he has no motivation either way.
You could say, well, I'm so satisfied. Why did it work? Why don't I stay home?
Right. Well, but the point is that why go to work is there for him. So should he work or shouldn't he work? He has no... Of course, if one has spirit... We're not talking about spiritual duties here. This is on a different level. He should work for Krishna. So if his work is for Krishna, then he should do it, actually. Because that type of work is never given up. Service to Krishna. But this is also, this is explained, that point that we're making about taking donations and keeping it. This is, in later on it's explained also how sinful that is, that when a brahmana collects money and doesn't distribute sufficiently, but gets fat on his donations, this is considered very inappropriate and very sinful. He's allowed to take donations to maintain himself. That's
kind of a Goswami made a big point of that in the second canon review at the beginning, and there's a warning against sannyasis collecting on that basis. With the motivation to maintain themselves first.
Or security. The essence of sannyas and the essence of, actually the essence of Krishna consciousness is dependence on Krishna. In the material world, everyone is trying to be independent. And in Krishna consciousness, we depend on Krishna and we are satisfied depending on Krishna. This is of the essence, even though we won't talk about it right now. So the example given is Janaka Maharaj. 21, famous verse. Yad yadat charati shreshtas tad tari vitaro jana siyat pramanam kurute lokas tad anavartate. Whatever great action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Now this is why the person who has no material desire to fulfill by performance of his duty, this is why he works. Now this isn't the only reason, because when we're talking about Krishna conscious people, devotees or devotees aspiring to be Krishna conscious, there's a different level added on the whole system, actually. Because they're detached materially but attached spiritually. And they don't work materially but they work spiritually. But here the point is that if someone doesn't work, he's going to set a very bad example. He's in the mode of goodness. He's practically transcendental. Because Prabhupada in so many purports equates the mode of goodness with transcendental. It's so fine and pure. It's almost transcendental. But if someone doesn't work, then people follow their example and the result is very bad, that the people in the mode of passion who should be working get degraded into the mode of ignorance. Just let me read a little more. And then Krishna tells a very heavy example over here in 22 and 23. O son of Prita, he says that even I myself work. There is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems. That means that Krishna, he says this in the fourth chapter, when he explains Chetavana Maya Shrishtam Gunakama Vibhagasa, explains that I created the Vanashrama system, but I have nothing to do with it. I'm beyond it myself. Akata. I'm beyond it, this system. So, but yet, although, and not only that, Krishna owns everything. All opulence, all wealth is his. So what does he need to do any duties for? What does he need to work for? He has nothing to gain. But yet Krishna says, I am the, there's no work prescribed for me within the three planetary systems, nor am I in want of anything. I don't need anything, so I don't have to work, nor have any need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. Why? And why prescribed duties? Because he follows Shastra for that same reason. Yad yada charati shreshas. To set a good example, because we all have a tendency to look at people above us and say, well, he's not doing it, why should I? Even though Krishna may be lifting Govindan Hill with one finger, as soon as he wants to dance with the gopis, we say, well, he's doing that, why shouldn't I do that? So this is the nature of envy. So Krishna says that I am setting the example. This is why I'm working myself. And if we read the Krishna book in the tenth canto of the Bhagavatam, we see Krishna acted as an ideal householder in Dwarka and followed all the Vedic rules and regulations. And then 23, for if I ever fail to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, O Partha, certainly all men would follow my path. And if I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all living beings. So it's very interesting how in the first chapter, one of Arjuna's main arguments was, in the first chapter, text 37 onward to 42 possibly, O Janardana, although these men, this is what Arjuna has said, although these men, their hearts overtaken by greed, see no fault in killing one's family or quarreling with friends. This is Arjuna speaking, why he didn't want to fight. Why should we who see the crime of destroying a family engage in these acts of sin? With the destruction of the dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished and the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted. And from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Rishni, comes Vana Sankara, unwanted progeny. And because of the increase of unwanted population, certainly causes hellish life, both for the family and those who destroy the family tradition. So Arjuna says, if I fight in this battle, I'm going to be the cause of Vana Sankara. And what Krishna is telling Arjuna here is if you don't fight in the battle, if you go to the forest and renounce your duty, then you're going to be the cause of Vana Sankara because of the bad example that you're setting. And what is the result of this unwanted population? You can see it in every city of the world, that these people are just wandering around and they're destroying the peace of all living beings. They're turning, and this is because in Kali Yuga, there's so much Vana Sankara, the world is being turned into hell. Literally hell, where you can't walk in the street and people kill you and shoot you. Even young children, there was a very famous case in the newspaper very recently with young children. How old were they? I'm sure. They wanted two boys or something. They wanted to see what it's like to kill somebody. So they killed. How old was the child they killed?
2 years old.
So just imagine the consciousness, even at a young age, that these children have. They want to see what it's like to kill like that. This is Vana Sankara. And it's said also in the schools, in the public schools in the United States and things like that. It's so dangerous in some of the schools. They're shooting, the kids are shooting each other, shooting the teacher. There's gangs. This is insanity. This is Vanasankara. It's hell. The children are so afraid and so much anxiety that they're afraid of someone killing them.
They have metal detectors.
Going into schools. Crazy. Because childhood is supposed to be free of anxiety. It's supposed to be peaceful, happy time. And these children are in so much anxiety because someone is going to kill them. They're some gang in the school. Protection money in the schools. If you don't pay money to people, they'll kill you. What to speak of what the teachers are feeling. That if I don't, what happens if I fail this child in math? And this is just, I remember when I was a boy, I'd hear, you know, the older people, you know, someone 40 years old talking about, when I was a boy, you know, these things didn't go on and everything was nice. And it used to sound so silly. But now that I'm 47, I'm thinking, even when I was a boy, which is only 35, 40 years ago, or whatever, none of these things were going on. Even in the West, even in New York City, which has such bad PR, and everyone's... But none of these things were going on at all, practically speaking. We never would even lock our doors at night or anything like that, never. So Kali Yuga is descending so fast, and this is one of the main agents, this Vanasankara. Families completely destroyed, illicit sex, mixing boys and girls at the youngest age, and therefore everyone, the whole world is going to hell so quickly, so quickly. Let me just finish more. So on with Krishna's prescription here. He's saying, Janaka performed his prescribed duties and attained perfection. Even I do my duties, and you want to leave Arjuna? You want to go to the forest and give up your duties? No. As the ignorant perform their duties with attachment to the resolves, the learned may similarly act, but without attachment, for the sake of leading people on the right path. Now here is an interesting point here. So as not to disrupt the minds of the ignorant men attached to the fruit of results of prescribed duties. So people who are working fruitively, you know, they're working like donkeys all day and night just to make money. So here's Krishna's prescription of what to do with them. We tend to want to say, you are fools, you are donkeys, why are you wasting your life like that? You should give up everything. Stop this. And of course we want them to chant Hare Krishna and become devotees. But if there's too much emphasis on how foolish material life is, and if they're in the mode of passion, what happens? A learned person should not induce them to stop work, because that's what happens. They realize that, yes, I'm so stupid working all day and night just to make some money, and I'm not going to be happy by that money. So I'm not going to work. And this is just what happened in the 60s in so many parts of the world. The young people realize, my parents are working like donkeys all day and night, and they're not happy. So I'm not going to work. But rather than becoming elevated in consciousness by that realization, they became even more degraded. And they just got involved in illicit activities, intoxication, etc., and mixing of this. So they went from passion to ignorance. So therefore this point of working is so important. Even if you realize that it's the most foolish thing is to engage in passionate work, trying to make money and get a car and get your house. Even if you realize that, the work should still go on. And how should we instruct people? Rather than telling them only that they should... that material things are no good and it's useless to acquire them. How should we instruct them? We should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working in the spirit of devotion, we teach them to be congregation members. We teach them to offer their food, to set up an altar in the house, to renounce some of the fruit of the work, to buy books, to come to the temple and do some seva, to preach to their friends, preach to distribute books and things like this. And this way, we engage people in work, never giving up work. We engage them in work, in devotion, so that they become elevated. Because if people give up work and become lazy, everything becomes ruined. You should understand this clearly. Because laziness means the mode of ignorance, and the mode of ignorance is degrading. I remember when we first started chanting Hare Krishna, and we opened up a temple in Buffalo, New York. And what we used to do, we had a sign up on the wall. And we wouldn't ask people for money, but we'd say, we need these kind of things, we have this kind of work to do. And then all the people would come, and they would see this, and they would bring things, and they would work in the garden. And we had a garden, and we were planting vegetables, and so many of the young college students would come and work in the garden. And they liked it so much. They would work in the garden, and the vegetables would come, zucchini, squash, and this, and the tomatoes, and the potatoes, or whatever we had planted would come, and the cucumbers, and we would take them and offer them to Krishna. And it was so satisfying to the heart for everyone to engage in this, growing flowers for Krishna. It was so nice. This principle is being invoked. You have to engage people. That's the first principle in preaching to people. Engage them, engage them, engage them. Not so much instruct them, instruct them, instruct them, instruct them, instruct them. Rather engage them, engage them, engage them, engage them. And then in the midst of the instructions, in the engaging them, then some instruction is gradually. This principle is so important of working. Because if someone is working, then there's a hope of them elevating that work from passion to goodness, and then from goodness beyond. So Prabhupada explains in the purport so nicely. Therefore, a realized soul in Krishna consciousness should not disturb others in their activities or understanding, but he should act by showing how the results of all work can be dedicated to the service of Krishna. The learned Krishna conscious person may act in such a way that the ignorant person working for sense gratification may learn how to act and how to behave. And how much pleasure there is in working for Krishna and detachment from enjoying the fruit of our work ourselves, thinking that we're the center. This is pleasure. So now, in 27, 28, 29, and 30, and we'll stop there. Krishna is going to explain that. So two people may be working, one who is very, very attached, one who is detached, and a third person may be working who's attached to Krishna and detached from matter, and the second person is maybe detached from matter completely but has no attachment to Krishna. So what the difference is in consciousness. And one who is in ignorance, this is how he thinks in 27. Another famous verse, Prakriti Kriyamanani, Gunai Kamani Sarvasha, Ahankara Vamudama, Karta Hamiti Manite. The spirit soul, influenced by false ego, under the influence of false ego, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. So everyone is being pushed by the modes of material nature, and yet in ignorance we're thinking that we're so powerful, we're so creative, we're so intelligent, we're so beautiful, we're so this, we're so that. But this is, we're so strong, powerful, clever. But all these things are simply the modes of material nature. So the devotee with transcendental knowledge knows these things, and therefore when he's working, he's not thinking, kartaham. He's not thinking, I am the doer. He's thinking, Krishna is mercifully giving me this energy and allowing me to serve him. Krishna has given me this body. through the modes of material nature. Krishna has given me this intelligence, Krishna has given me some money, Krishna has given me this, Krishna has given me that, and therefore I should use all this in Krishna's service. In that way, while he's working, he's able to work. One who is in knowledge of the Absolute Truth. So that's the importance of knowledge. This Bhagavad Gita is so practical because it teaches us how to think in the material world in a Krishna conscious way and thereby get out of the material world. So knowledge, transcendental knowledge, is so important. And it will be explained in chapter 4 that it burns to ashes all the resultant sinful activities that may be plaguing us. This transcendental knowledge is so important. And in the fifth chapter, it talks about how to apply that transcendental knowledge in our life. So one who is in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, O Mighty Arm, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the difference between work and devotion and work for fruitive results. So these two should become very clear to us. What is the difference between work and devotion and work in fruitive work, and also just simply detached work? Bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached. But the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. So the wise should not unsettle them because the better they become engaged and keep working. But they should be taught how to elevate themselves by their work. And the main difference is between that passion and goodness is transcendental knowledge. The more we hear and the more we know about Krishna and the science of Krishna consciousness, naturally the more we'll apply it to our life, and the more we become elevated in consciousness, the more we become detached, the more we become realized, etc. So this transcendental knowledge is so important. It makes the difference. It is the difference between the person in passion and the person in goodness. So therefore we stress book distribution because it is a distribution of transcendental knowledge. And we stress hearing Shastra because it is transcendental knowledge. And we stress applying Shastra to our lives because it is the application of transcendental knowledge, and thereby we become pure. And then the last verse that we'll read today. Therefore, Arjuna, Krishna's getting to the point. Surrendering all your works unto me, and this brings it to a new level, not just do your duty in a detached way, but give me your work, the fruit of your work. And even better than that, work because I'm telling you to work. Then it goes up another stage to bhakti, pure bhakti, just working because Krishna wants one to work. With full knowledge of me, in full knowledge of who I am, who Krishna is, without desire for profit, detached from the fruit of work, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, which means ignorance, fight, do your duty and fight. So someone may be just doing their duty, and that's goodness. And if someone is doing their duty because Krishna tells them to do the duty, then it is bhakti. So there's subtle differences. So we can't tell, when we see Arjuna fighting, we can't tell because Krishna's given so many reasons why he should fight. He says you should fight to gain the heavenly planets. In the second chapter he says you should fight because it's your duty. And here he's saying you should fight because I'm ordering you to fight. So the fighting is going on, but there are different levels and there'll be different results in there. One is high and one is low. Okay, you've had questions for a long time.
I was just going to say, when you were speaking about the kick, when the street kids were that other kick, there was an article in the Times newspaper in London where the court case showed that it was influenced by a movie that he'd been seeing on TV, which her child, had an unfortunate death.
Yeah.
And he said it was because of the
So that means that demons are propagating this. But you should also know, although they say that, blaming it on another, that there were probably hundreds of children who watched it, or thousands, and only one who chose to kill somebody. That means he had that sanskar in him. Not every child went out after seeing the movie and did that. But yet the demons are propagating their insanity.
Well, I don't understand that. Satkam Kavya and the Nishkam Kavya. You explain something about being spiritually attached to
no, being. If one's materially attached to one's duty, that's nishkam karma. But he's detached from the fruit. When he gives the fruit to Krishna, that will elevate him further. And then when one's ready to surrender and even work the way Krishna wants him to work, even though, just like Trivikram Swami, one time, one morning he went to see Prabhupada in Mayapur, and Prabhupada told me he should go to Japan. So he left and he went out and bought a ticket. But then some of the local GBC in Japan complained he didn't want him there. So Prabhupada called him back in the afternoon and said, okay, I want you to go to Korea. And he said, but Prabhupada, you just told me to go to Japan and I bought the ticket and everything. And Prabhupada said, yes, and now I'm telling you to go to Korea. And he said, okay. So that's not attachment to the work either. That's attachment to surrender to the order of the spiritual master. So that is even a higher stage, and that's actually that stage when one has no attachment to anything but except for Krishna.
So from verses 17 or 19 to 29, this is talking about
basically, yes.
And then 30 is back here.
Well, we're calling it that. Because when we're talking about and actually, if you read the purport, it's a wonderful purport. It's one of the Prabhupada describes. It goes on. I'm condensing a lot of philosophy because we're only in the third chapter, and I'm telling you things from the fifth chapter. And then when it comes to reading the purport, Prabhupada explains, this verse clearly indicates the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord instructs that one has to become fully conscious to discharge duties as if in military discipline, etc. One has to be surrendered. Up over here, it's talking about surrender.
This verse is talking about becoming and spiritual,
you're not attached to your duty. You're attached to the fact, to the order of Guru and Krishna. That's what you're attached to. And therefore you're attached to the duty. Not because it doesn't begin with attachment to the duty. That's a higher stage.
The latter verses, the earlier verses, they explain about...
They all explain, this is why it can get confusing, because Krishna speaks on many levels at once. And Prabhupada usually in the purport explains the highest level. And he explains how Krishna ultimately is talking about bhakti in everything, to make sure that we don't misunderstand anything of what the ultimate is. So one can take it in several different ways. So it's a little, it can get confusing. Huh? Then you should surrender, like Arjuna. Don't worry. You have to hear it several times. It's meant for studying deeply, but do you understand the progression as we described it?
Yeah, but I just don't understand it as an Nishkam Karma.
Nishkam Karma Yoga can mean one out of two things. It can mean detachment, just like a Mayavadi. He has no, or a Brahmavadi, and he says the Supreme is impersonal, so he's going to do his duty, but detached. He has no spiritual attachment, he has just detachment. So that's Nishkam Karma Yoga. But one, for a devotee, he could be doing his duty detached from it, but giving all the fruits to Krishna, like one of the disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Professor Sanyal. He would work and he would come with a paycheck. He was married, he would come with a paycheck and give it to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And then his wife would come to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and get her allowance. So he was surrendering everything. So he had, that's bhakti. Or we could say that's, we could say on one level, we don't know if that's bhakti yet. If Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wants him to work in that way, because it's his desire, then it's bhakti. But if Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is engaging him in that way because he's attached to it, then it's still karma yoga. Nishkam karma yoga with bhakti. Follow? Is that, raise your hand if you understand this point. It's subtle and tricky. It's nishkam karma yoga when you're attached to the work, but you're detached from the fruit. But if you're detached from the fruit and giving it to Krishna, it's called nishkam karma yoga, or it's called bhakti, because it leads to bhakti. But if you're not attached to the work, but Krishna, like Arjuna, why is he fighting? Because it's his duty, Krishna tells him that, but ultimately he's fighting because Krishna wants him to fight, so then it's bhakti. So it depends on his consciousness, which level he's acting on.
That's the higher level of nishkam karma.
It's the bhakti level.
You said there's two levels of nishkam karma.
Because we want to practice bhakti yoga, so it's the highest. But they're going in different directions, actually speaking. If you're an impersonalist, just detachment is sufficient, and then you go to Brahman. But because we're not impersonalists, we understand the different transcendental levels. We understand that being detached from the fruit and offering it to Krishna is higher than just being detached from the fruit. Because it's bhakti as opposed to just detachment.
But they still come under the concept of Krishna.
Yes. Yeah. But, yes. But we can call it bhakti, this, I explained this right at the beginning, that we can call that nishkama karma yoga or bhakti, and Prabhupada sometimes uses karma yoga and bhakti interchangeably because nishkama karma leads to bhakti, actual bhakti. And that will be described in the 9th chapter, the difference between nishkama karma yoga and in the bhakti cycle and actual bhakti. Is the difference between Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam and Yat Karosi Rajnasi, the 26th and the 27th verse. One is all that you do, that you like to do, just offer it to me. And Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam is all that you do what I want you to do. You offer me with love and devotion, a leaf of fruit, a flower, water. And the tricky part also, you can't, is that, say if someone's duty is to fight, and it looks like he's attached to it, like Arjuna, but he may only be doing it because Krishna wants him to do it. He may be doing his duty, but because Krishna wants him to do it, and then it's bhakti, not nishkam karma. Follow? It depends on, just like Prabhupada once told me, I was living outside the temple, I had left Hong Kong, I was preaching in Hong Kong, which he really wanted me to do. And I was living outside the temple in Melbourne, Australia. And then, so he told me you should become peaceful, you should be peaceful and take care of your family. So that wasn't actually the highest instruction, but it was the one I should follow right now. So it's very hard to know exactly what is on our spiritual master's mind unless he reveals it to us. So regardless if we shouldn't become envious and think, oh, I want to do the highest thing, but we should accept his instruction and does simply do it. But if it's what he wants you to do, then it's bhakti. If you do it depends on your motivation. Are you doing it because he's telling you to do it, or are you doing it because of, he may know your capacity isn't to fully surrender. So, but we can't get too mentally involved in all these things. We should just, if he tells it, we should just do what he says, and the result will be there gradually. You follow? Yes or no?
How does Gona Bhaktiyoga fit?
Huh?
How does Gona Bhaktiyoga?
What does Gona mean? Indirect. Yeah? So, that it's Misra. I'm not as familiar with those terms as this. So if you explain to me what it means, I'll tell you what it means.
Well, I understood from Brahma Samhita that even Lord Rama was performing, his propensity was towards creation.
So that's, so then it's Karma Yoga.
It's like dovetailing.
Yeah, that's what it means. That's Yat Karosi Rajnasi. You do what you want for Krishna. And that's a very practical level to engage people on and to engage ourselves in. Actually.
What? Very interesting point. Something I've always been ignorant of in my preaching efforts. And that is that engagement is a higher thing than just preaching words. Otherwise, the tendency is that you get someone attached to the situation. But
that we can't do. We have to engage people, but they should hear so that they see. Remember the position of transcendental knowledge. That's going to make the difference in the quality of their work.
But my question is, there's some people who might be attached to whatever they do, so better, like you say, that they should carry on, but by once they carry on,
but if someone has the capacity to fully surrender, and what is that capacity? It's basically faith in the Guru's instructions. And if the Guru instructs them to fully surrender, just do it even though it's hard. So if someone has that capacity, then there is no harm in instructing them to fully surrender, even though it may be difficult in his nature. But if someone doesn't have the capacity, see, that's what, therefore one has to be very intelligent and subtle to engage people properly. So it's better generally to elevate people gradually. But during Prabhupada's, when Prabhupada was leading the movement, he didn't bother. Just chant Hare Krishna, surrender, go out, give up everything, distribute books, go leave everything, go preach all over the world. Because there were a few reasons. One, he was such so powerful personality that under his shelter one could actually do that, because he invoked so much faith and spiritual inspiration. And secondly, it was a very much an emergency situation. But the tendency within ISKCON nowadays is not that. It's more towards congregational preaching and gradual elevation. But if someone has the capacity to immediately surrender, if you give them that instruction, if you're their spiritual master. I'm sorry.
I also want to say something on this Nishkamkaram Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. Text 19 of this chapter describes it as, therefore, without being attached to the source of activities, one should act as a matter of duty. For by working without attachment, one attains this Supreme. This is Nishkam Karma Yoga. And in chapter 8, text 7, it is said that Tasmat Sarveshu Kalishu Mamna Samarjitya Mai Arpit Mana Buddhir Mame Vaishyasi Sanche. This is pure bhakti.
Because it's remembrance, pure remembrance of Krishna.
This is difference between bhakti and Nishkam Karma Yoga.
But remember, Arjuna is fighting.
He's
in both circumstances, in both verses, he's fighting, but remember that it's the consciousness that's always important. So if you're motivated by I want to do whatever Krishna wants, then it's bhakti. And Krishna wants me to fight, then it's bhakti. Then I'm fighting. But if you're motivated, I want to fight, it's my nature, I can't help it, so let me fight for Krishna. Will you please, Krishna, please accept this offering of fighting I'm making for you? That's karma yoga. So both you could be remembering Krishna, right?
He's remembering Krishna and he's performing his duty.
But both you could be remembering Krishna. So it's a matter of even more deeper than that. It seems.
Is it necessary
Therefore, without the order of the spiritual, the spiritual master is like the doctor. He has to engage us according to our capacity and our level, or according to desire. And our business is to surrender. That's the spiritual master has to think these things through.
Is it necessary, therefore, for the disciple to have faith that the spiritual master will be able to engage him according to his particular nature?
No. It's necessary that the spiritual, that the disciple has unflinching faith in the spiritual master.
And that he can make it to work.
And let him take care of how he engages you. So you don't have to worry about his side of the work. You have to worry about your side. You have to know that he's a doctor, that he can feel your pulse, he knows what level you're at. And we shouldn't be envious when someone's at a higher level than us and gets engaged differently than us. We should have faith that if I act according to my position, it is the best thing for me. I should do my own duty, not do another's. We should do our own duty. And to do the work of another is dangerous for that reason. Well, we've done it again. Don't worry, I only have another 20 more verses I wanted to read. Actually, I wanted to go, there's more on this ladder too, in the fifth chapter. But either I'll forget it, not do it, or I'll do it next class, because it's already so late. It's so interesting, in the fifth chapter it describes the next step is the result of working in Nishkam Karma Yoga, is that you become completely aloof from the body. That means you go up beyond goodness, because sat kam sanjayate jnanam, you get knowledge. And then you understand that you're not your body, and then the next step is liberation. So it's very, very interesting. And how to get that. Very interesting. This is the yoga ladder. And then the next step is in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And then the next step is the middle chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, when you focus on Krishna. So either we'll do that fifth chapter section, or we'll go back to the next section in the third chapter, is what gets in our way. We get philosophically inspired, and from now on I'm going to be completely detached and do my duty and whatever my Guru Maharaj tells me I'm going to do from now on. And then it doesn't work. Why? That's described in the next section in the third chapter. So we'll talk about that. And then after that, we'll probably go on to, in the sixth chapter, how Krishna describes how difficult it is to control the mind. So we'll talk about controlling the mind and focusing on the holy name. This, from the sixth chapter, we'll take a seed verse in that, because Krishna says, controlling the mind is as difficult to control as the wind. And then we'll go on to the seventh chapter, how to focus our mind on Krishna by seeing Krishna everywhere. And then we'll go into the ninth chapter, speaking about devotional service and its sweetness. I think that the ninth chapter, we'll start doing that in the beginning of the second of the third week.
So we want these two-week courses.
Huh?
What? We were told that these are two-week courses.
Yeah. Why did I do it like that?
So will it be progressive? For example, you should take both?
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was going to be a repeated.
The reason why I did that is to make a division so that, because Giri Rajmaraj was going to teach a two-week course.
Right.
So to give his students the option to come to the second part of this one. But it seems like he's going to go on. Because both he and I have the tendency to go on and on and on. Because he's probably still talking in his class right now too.
Okay, now
we can start.